The following program may contain content that your kids would love to hear, but you may not want them to.
But you are in that chair, Blanche. You are. And you're going to sit there until you eat all of your dead bird dinner and listen to Cthulhu Chronicles, Blanche.
Okay, here we go.
Listening to Frank Cthulhu.
It's a paradox. It's a mirror of confusion.
art of broadcasting. I have come to bury the generation, not to praise them. It's me. It's me. Some new thoughts, which are really related a lot to the old thoughts, and some old thoughts as they were thought about back here at Cotolo Chronicles. My name is Frank Cotolo. Man's name is Orange, the title of the show. Recording this on the very night, 50 years ago, when I was in that asshole. I think you get the gist of how this is going to go. Stay with us! To Ice Cap, from Hamlet to City, from Othello, and into every bordello. Should I turn this on? That's it. There you go. Oh, the silence. Oh, it's beautiful, isn't it? Here he goes. I think that Joni Mitchell should have had that guy screaming. Should have, he was screaming, whatever he was saying there, you know. Her typical audience, I think, right? That is freaked out. Oh, I gotta put it back on. Freaked out and, all right, come on. Hey, we gotta be cool here. My name is Frank Cotolo. Man, his name adorns the title of the show. It's mid-August, after the hottest July ever recorded in the face of the earth, I think, or something like that. Ask Bill Nye, the science guy. He'll tell you. But in this event, in any event, and I'm here, and, I'm going to, do some things to catch up with. You know, it's strange because this show was planned for last week, and it was merely planned as a little introduction, and then I'd go back and replay what I wrote about Woodstock, it's kind of writing, it's verbal, you're right, it's, you know, when I did a show about Woodstock. But I had no idea anniversaries, they're big on anniversaries now. If you notice that, the media is big on anniversaries, right? It's the 25th anniversary of Shaft. You know, they come up with movies. They're not even, okay, Shaft was okay. And Richard Roundtree was a great guy. I know, personally. But anyway, I'm saying to you that they come up with these things like, it's the 21, it's the, you know, they do that to sell, I guess, the product again. But in any event, in all events, it's certainly this event. The Woodstock, I was going to do this show last week and, you know, put this stuff together, do a little collage and stuff, blah, blah, blah. But we had the similar problem that we've had this summer. You know, the year started out with technical difficulties, zeros and ones, colliding and various things happening that happen on this platform of digital broadcasting. And because we don't do it like the pioneer of podcasting does it and all those other guys. But anyway, so there was some problems. And I think that was a bit of fate, because it turns out that the Thursday after that Thursday is this Thursday, which is the exact evening that of the first day of 3 days of love and peace, air quotes, and So here we are, and I can take you back, and I will take you back, and have some thoughts on what happened 50 years ago tonight. That's tough to say, because that means I was there, and I was there, okay? 50 years ago tonight, I know exactly where I was standing, and how difficult that, it was an adventure. I mean, that's all I can say now, because how many people can say they were at the original Woodstock? A lot of people. And it brings up a whole bunch of things that were horrible about it. But then I think now, as I think back to 50 years ago, what a time that had been for me in my life, so different from so many in my generation. And now that I look back at it, you know, it's not pleasant, because it wasn't pleasant. But so my point is not to get into this right now, because it's a mother business to do before we move on. And that is, it's the exact night. Isn't that something, how that worked out? It's amazing. But here we are once again live and through the week rebroadcast on various stations. CatoloChronicles.blogspot.com, where you could find out where the show goes or when it goes or if it goes. But we hope to, over the next couple of weeks and going into September, as the weather gets cooler, and it will get cooler regardless of climate change. It's not time to burn up yet. As we get shorter days and longer nights, shorter days and longer nights. Lots of things have changed since the last time I was here, but that's okay, because that's life. This is what happens. And I got to tell you something great about Woodstock before I get into all the negatives and funny stuff, okay? And that is that I am happy to say I'm still here to talk about it. That's what I'm happy about. But I do have a lot of questions about how many? Half a million strong? What did Joni say? I don't even think Joni was there, to be honest with you. So what's the big deal? What's all the drama about? We got to get back to the garden. The garden, the mud patch. We got to get back to the, okay, all right. Hang in there, friends. My name is Frank Cotolo, man whose name adorns the title of the show. And this is Cotolo Chronicles. We're going to have some guests over the next couple of weeks. I'm lining them up because when it's cooler down here and when the Skype is working, we can get people on the show, have some conversations. Some that have been here, some that haven't been here, some that will be here, and some that will be here again, return here, and any possible combination of that. One of them being Craig. Craig is going to be here with more another basketball book. It's not a basketball book. It's a science fiction book for teenagers. He's a teenage. He's not a teenage. I think he's a teenager. He's not a teenager. He writes in that very pro... I was going to say promiscuous, but that's wrong, because I'm thinking of something else, and I don't even want to get into that now. That's another show. He writes in that it's a very healthy genre, teenage kids books, I don't know. And he'll be here. Craig later will be here with more about that. And we'll talk, try to sell some of his books, because that's what we do. And because young people listen to the show when it's on. When it's not on, it's up in the clouds, and there's music, and I say things that you may have heard, may not have heard, may not care about, or what have you. And new stuff is coming up. We're going to have stuff on the cloud more. And by the way, regardless of how little we're on or how much we're on anymore, you're welcome for the wonderful radio. You're not going to hear that from those podcast guys who are, hello, how come the podcast guys are getting, they got a better agent? Oh, I shouldn't say that. I'm sorry. I said my agent, you know. I'm sorry. I didn't mean that. No one is a better agent than I have. So there. We're going to have those people on. And we're going to talk about a lot of things. Books. We're going to sell some books. And we're going to talk about, I'm going to have the artist Dion. The artist Dion and the Belmonts. No, the artist D appearing with me on the show. We're going to talk about something that I brought up a while back. And D said something to me, wrote to me, texted me. Oh, yeah. I got a smartphone now. I don't just have a tabloid, Android tabloid. Is that called a tabloid? I don't know. So D says, you know, I was talking about how crowded the interweb is now, how the internet is just so crowded. And we're going to talk about that. Dee says there are some stories to tell about that on Dee's end and on my end. Of course, we'll talk more about that, because this is like a Japanese rush hour subway car. That's what the interweb now just appears to be. That appears to be? No, it doesn't appear to be. That's exactly, this is the internet now. Okay? A Japanese subway car at rush hour. Okay? We're talking about packed like tunas. Is that what it? Tuna packed or whatever? Okay. So, we did that and some other stuff we did. We're going to do that there coming up too in the September. And I got, you know, notes hanging around from here from, what, 2-3 weeks ago, whatever we did here. And I want to get some of this stuff straight. We're going to have the Coconut Monkey Rocket. Jason Emmett is going to be on, my friends, Yanjua, my friends. He's going to be on because the Coconut Monkey Rocket has another album coming out. And we love the Coconut Monkey Rocket. The Coconut Monkey Rocket. If you can get together something like that in your life, you will be fulfilled. You know the Coconut Monkey Rocket. I guess it's coconutmonkeyrocket.com. Wherever it may be, go get it. Just put in Coconut Monkey Rocket in any search engine. I'm not promoting specifics. And you will hear it. You'll hear it and you'll want to get, download them and put them on your device. Put them on your device because, and then put them in your ears and, you know, earplugs, which used to be going, excuse me, headphones, but now they're earplugs. Okay. I don't know this person. Let's see. What is this? Stuff about, what? Martini Bomb. That's the other group. I say group, but, you know, it's the other, I'm going to say group. The Coconut Monkey Rocket is a group. It's also an atmosphere. It's a sound. It's a platform. It's a theater. So is Martini Bomb. And that'll be around. Stuff about UFOs coming up, right? We got all these pieces of paper that have been sitting around forever. Not forever. That means it was, you know. Oh, we did this one. Well, here's stuff. See, here's stuff I've done. I haven't even cleaned up my office here. I've been doing it. Let's see. What is this? More about, a lot of stuff about trains, huh? I guess I should go back to that one of these days because there's other train stuff. I heard a train song I recorded a while back. Way while. When I say while back, I don't mean like, I mean later than Woodstock. But I'm going to get into some Woodstock stuff here too. But I just want to go through so I see what I can throw this stuff out. Okay, we'll do that some other time. But for now, the godfather of internet radio and podcasts and streamcasts. What are those streamcasts and streams and all that stuff? And who else? I don't know. Get this here. And place is a mess and there's too many spiders down here. Yeah, spiders. I keep saying that last year I said I'm going to clean up this studio and this place. I'm going to move the piano, clean the floor and everything. I didn't do it. And I'm not, angry at myself. I'm not depressed for not doing it. It's just that, you know, I got things to do. And then I go through these phases. I just finished a gigantic project that I can't tell you about. So why even talk about it, right? My point being, I'm a busy guy and I'm happy that 50 years ago, I could talk about that, whether it's positive or negative. And you know something, for me, Woodstock was a negative experience physically, spiritually, mentally. That covers them all, right? Mentally, physically, and spiritually. I'm happy that I can tell you about it and that I'm here and alive to tell you about it. Because one of the things I think about, and one of the things I originally thought about even before I did this show that I hadn't thought about when I did the 2009 Woodstock show that I'm going to play it later. Because I don't want to repeat myself, even though, well, I am repeating myself because I said it before. My point is there are things I didn't say before, but here on the 50th anniversary, and we don't do anniversary shows. We don't do Christmas. Well, no, we don't. We don't really do Christmas shows. We do shows. I do shows that involve things that happened in Christmas, you know, in general. We don't do those flavored shows that make, about legends of the world. Oh, look who died. A legend. But, you know, I'm happy to be here. And I know all those people who died would give anything to be here as opposed to being dead, although they can't make a comparison. That's what I'm saying. I don't know that, but it's me, Frank Cotolo. And the other thing is, you know, I've been doing value packs. I just threw out from my notes here two value packs. I never got into the value packs. You know, we do those value pack shows. I like them. They're fun. And I get another batch of them today. You know, the value pack business must be doing well. And that's odd because it has to do with print, huh? Print advertising? What the hell is that? Oh my God. As much as things change, they do remain the same, don't they? Well, here's what I was thinking, as I said, when I heard about the Woodstock. When I thought about doing the show, this show, I said, what else could I say that I hadn't said? Well, I didn't say this, but here's what I thought. Of all those people, and as what did Joni Mitchell say? We were 500,000 strong. Were there 500,000 there? Oh, God, it felt like every person on earth, it did not feel like every person on earth, but it was a lot of people. And they were difficult to distinguish between one and the other. You know, it's not politically, it's not, nice to say that if you're in a crowd of artesians. What are artesians, right? I'm trying to find a race that I can say without sounding racist, because I'm not a racist person. You know, there's not a racist hair on my racist head. No, but I mean, let's say you're in a group of artesians from the planet Artesia, right? There you go. Can't get in trouble now. And you say like, well, they kind of look alike, right? And I would stick out because I don't look Artesian, all right? But at Woodstock, everybody looked alike. Because they all had, they had beard, facial hair or long hair, round glasses, scarves, and the way they were dressed, the way they were groomed or ungroomed as the case may be. And me too. I had long hair. I don't remember if I had I don't think I had a mustache or a beard at that particular time, but I know my hair was long, and so I looked like, I fit in, and everybody fit in. But it was like, one person from another. There's a joke I told, and I probably tell it on the other. I'm trying to not say things I said on the 2009 show, which you're going to hear. I want that to be fresh to you, and I don't want to repeat it. But I hadn't thought of this. How many of those people who attended and are alive at the Grasgow's farm? It wasn't Grasgow. See, that's the first name that came to my mind. That's the way I find things. Klaskov's farm. she said it, didn't she? Say it in the, weren't they in the lyrics? That's the garden. Yeah, the methane garden. I think it's more like the. I forgot his name, but doesn't matter. Because the guy who did the farm gave the farm away. I think he bought the farm by now, so he's not here to celebrate. But Yasger, that was it. Yasger, right? Carl Yasger? Was it Carl? I don't know. How many people, not that are listening tonight, but tonight, are alive from that crowd? I think of these things, okay? I'm here, and there must be a ton of other people. Because I don't think 500,000 people minus me and a couple of people I know who were there who were still alive, right? They're not like the survivors of Woodstock. Someday there will be survivors of Woodstock like they have. Really, this is what they'll do someday. On the evening news, if there's still an evening news, if there's still a television or wherever it is they do the news, streaming it or, however it goes to people with earplugs, earbuds. And they'll say, and I don't know what year that would be. Let's say it's 2030. Okay, let's see. 2030. And the news guy goes like this. Today, Arnold Melbourne, the last survivor of the live Woodstock concert. The concert to end all concerts. It wasn't called that. It was 3 days of love and peace. The last survivor of Woodstock is dead. Yeah, they'll do that. Someone will be the last survivor, like they had the last survivor of the Civil War, right? Because you're at 102, Arnold Woodstock. I couldn't even come up with a name that wasn't Woodstock. Arnold Ratsby, the lone survivor of the Woodstock Music Festival of Peace and Love, is dead. There are now no people on the face of the earth who have been to Woodstock who are living. Big deal. Big deal. So I wonder. I would do something. I know other shows might do things like they might send out a pod or whatever it is they send out, like NASA sends out pods or whatever, scanners or not scanners or probers, probes. That's it, probes. See, I find the word. Like NASA sends out probes to planets. Oh, like NASA sends out probes to planets. NASA sends out probes to planets. Let's see how many times I can say. NASA sends out probes. I couldn't even say it once. NASA sends out probes to planets. NASA sends out probes to planets. NASA sends out probes to planets. This is what actors do, by the way. It's an exercise. You have to find a good sentence like that, a little phrase, and say it over and over again if it's difficult to say. And it helps you to accentuate. Is it accentuate? No. NASA sends out probes to planets. 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 Other shows might have sent out probes saying, if you were at Woodstock and you were there any one of the days or all three of the days, please call in. You know, we'd have call-ins and we'd have these people would call up and they would not sound at all. If they called up during the Woodstock, if you talk to somebody who was there, this is the cartoon in my head of Woodstock, okay? And anything I pretty much do, which becomes that memory of, and becomes like a drama, a cartoon, not necessarily a cartoon like, you know, Bugs Bunny, but it becomes an illustration, moving illustration memory, okay? And this, if you talk to somebody there, it was like this. Hey, Yasgur's farm. Is this Yasgur's farm? Yeah, man. This is Yasgur's farm. You heard that guy? Did you hear that guy screaming on the Joni Mitchell song that she wrote about Woodstock that was so serious and made it sound like this was an event that is going to change the world? And then, you know, 2 million raspberries in the background. In fact, he did it. He did raspberries. I know it was tough to hear. He was doing raspberries. In between his philosophicals, love, man, you know. Today, somebody, I am somebody who was there, but most people who were there, I'm not going to talk for those people. I mean, they wouldn't sound like that, you know, because number one, they wouldn't be high. If they were, then they got a lot more to be thankful for than I do, because people who took drugs for 50 years straight like that, holy Christmas. And I doubt it, because now they're probably on different, they're on, not steroids. Well, some are on steroids, I guess, if they have heart problems, or they're on, you know, on blood pressure medicine. I'm on blood pressure medicine, but it's very, very little. So you have to say that. You have to qualify it, because I'm insecure. I can't say like, yeah, I got really high blood pressure. So therefore I have to take a lot of blood. I know to take a very, but I have to say it. You don't need to know that it's a little bit, but I have to say that because I'm insecure. I want to stay alive. I want to be immortal. And, so they're on different pills, right? And maybe on antidepressant pills. Well, the closest things to being high, because they're what? They're soft amphetamines, right? And those kind of things, that are now, medicinal. But nothing like those acid things, you know, those acid things. And I'm laughing. People were throwing themselves. They were literally throwing themselves in midair. Okay. How could you? And I remember looking around going, how is anybody enjoying this? I really went because I went. I went. It didn't matter. I didn't pay a lot. It wasn't very expensive, okay? But it turned out nobody paid because too many people came to cash in their tickets or whatever. But I went hoping for the best. And a lot of people did, except they acclimated better than I did and my friends. I was there with, you'll hear about it. I'm not going to tell you now. But I wonder who were there. So I didn't do that. I didn't send out a probe and say, hey, come on the show if you were there and tell me, about what? Because you know what? I think most people will disagree with me. Their memories will be of their own youth. I have lots of memories of my youth from that time. But they're not related to that. To that, you know what I mean? There are better things I recall, things, memories I cherish, things I have absorbed about that era than that festival, which is really stretching it, calling it a festival. So I don't think if I got anybody on, I don't think they'd say things like it was horrible. But I did have, let's see, I got to get this now because I didn't do this before. Oh boy, where is it? I got to go to Yahoo because there were a couple of things I could go through that have to do with some two. Wait a second. Oh, well, can't I do a dozen things at once here? What is it? Oh, Yahoo. Let me go to Yahoo. Oh, let me go to Yahoo and sign in. No, I don't want this to be my homepage. What's wrong with the, well, that's a whole nother thing. No thanks. What I want to do is get to the mail here, and I want to sign in to, yes, right here. Yep. Hold on here. Did it work? Yes, it did. I want to get here because I want to find these pieces of that were sent to me by my good friend, Mr. Bill Minnick, had sent me. Where is it? Let's see. John Sebastian. Here it is. Where is it from? It's from Rolling Stone. Let me kill this thing here. Yeah, that's right. I'm on it. It's from the Rolling Stone magazine. I don't know what. Let's see what. Let me adjust my mic and put everything. Woodstock remembered from John Sebastian. Okay, this is John Sebastian. I was there when I saw John Sebastian do this, do his bit. I don't remember where it is. He wrote a little piece for Rolling Stone. I'm going to go over it with you, and we'll see. Now he's 20 years. Well, I don't know if he's 20 years older. It doesn't matter how much older he is than I am. Okay. Briefly, my encounters with John. It's a whole nother story that we don't have to go into now. Let's just go into this. He performed at the Woodstock Music Festival, and here is what he wrote. In case you didn't read it, because who reads Rolling Stone anymore anyway? Do you buy it? Can you even buy it, or is it only online? We don't know. We don't care. But he wrote it. And I'll just go through it here and see what he said about it. This is John Sebastian, probably edited. He's a pretty good writer. He wrote children's books. And children's books always sell, don't they? I don't know. Okay, John Sebastian, he says, I wasn't scheduled to perform, but I was there from the beginning. There was a casualness about the format that has never existed again. I just showed up backstage and asked Chipmunk. Now, Chipmunk, I don't think that was his real name. He was the stage manager. He was the announcer. He came out and said, all right, how's everybody doing? There's a medical post. He'd tell you where the, you know, where the nurses were and where you could get water, if you could get water, whatever. He goes, and he said, so John Sebastian said, can I help? And, of course, Chipmunk said, sure, millions of people are coming and we're not prepared. We don't have much of a staff and everything is sort of improvised. Yeah. Duh! So, he said, I've just been living in a Volkswagen bus tent in a muddy little culvert in L.A. So I told Chip, I know how to live in these things. And Chip said, great, you're in charge of the tent. So John Sebastian became the welcoming committee. He says, I'd show people how to get their guitars dry. Don't walk into the tent with muddy feet, you know? That first night, I slept with the incredible string band. This, I was going to say shrinking band. The incredible string band, all their instruments and lots of other people in this 8x8-foot space. It was hilarious. Oh, yes, hilarious. Sure, again, you're going to hear about... Remember, he's backstage. It's a whole other world, the performers. You'll hear about that in the replay. He said, I consider Woodstock one of my lousiest performances. Frank Catolo here. I don't necessarily agree, although I was used at the time to seeing John very close up at places like Cafe Gogo and I forgot the other place. You know, really close, little clubs, those little Greenwich Village clubs. But he says it was one of his lousiest performances because by the time I was asked to play, I was as stoned as everybody else. Yeah, see? It had been raining, it was, and Chipmunk approached me. John, we need someone to hold the stage with an acoustic instrument because we've got to sweep the stage before we can even put an amp on it. So this is very early, see, I guess. It was raining when I began to play, and a la Cecil B. DeMille. Oh, he's trying to be a writer. The sun came out just as I was finishing. One of the things I said during my performance was that this event was an outgrowth of people sitting around tables, passing joints, and talking about how things could be. Suddenly, here was an explosion of that, a multiple of the same phenomena. Oh, he is being, what is he being? What is that called? That's just he's trying to be poetic or literary or whatever. Prosaic. Rick Danko, who is dead, one of the members of the band, Rick Danko and I being him, John Sebastian went over to the large white tents where Wavy Gravy, nobody remembers Wavy Gravy and the Hog Farmers, were cooling out acid casualties. An acid casualty, of course, is somebody who took either too much or any amount of LSD that made them nutty. You know, the amount of acid a person could take was not proportion. It may have been proportioned to their how nuts they were in the first place. Could be, or it was totally random, right? You don't know. And I don't think doctors know. They never stop studying the darn thing. And I think it was illegal by the time, by 67. Remember, LSD was not always illegal. So when it really started pass around and the young people started using it, the hallucinogenic was available and it wasn't free, but it was okay. Well, what does he say? Every kid who came in would say, "Here, man, please take these and don't let me ever see them again." And the guys were, you know, Rick Danko and I tried to think of soothing songs to tell them, okay. When Jimi Hendrix was playing Star Spangled Banner, my brother and I were pushing. Now, John Sebastian had a brother. I don't know if you know this, but he helped him write some songs, including his the Love and Spoonful's biggest hit, if it was their biggest hit, Summer in the City. Yeah, not a lot of people don't know about John's brother. Okay, but anyway, he was with him. My brother and I were pushing somebody's car out of the mud and making our exit. Most of the people had gone, and it looked like a battlefield, like a war had gone on. I've spent 20 years living down the outfit I was wearing. I was really into tie-dyeing at the time, and it was basically tie-dye Levi jeans and jacket. Yeah, that's right, the Woodstock suit of lights, as someone called it. He still has a jacket, John says. And the pants were stolen from a New York laundromat. Who would want John Sebastian's pants? That is too freaky and disgusting. Yikes. That's it. That's what he wrote. Okay. So he really didn't say much. He just reported. He just didn't report it. He didn't say things like, "This was fabulous" or anything. It's crap. So that was what, thank you, John, for that. What was that? What did he say? That was a nothing burger. It was a nothing. We got to change that because now that's a new thing. It's a nothing burger, which means you're absorbing, you're eating, you're consuming. They didn't, you know, an article. It's a nothing article started out in journalism, the nothing burger. So the burger is the article. The article is the thing and you're eating it or as in you're absorbing it. Means it's just there's no real news there. There's nothing really you need to know. Now, the other one that Mr. Minnick gave me was Billy's Woodstock. I did not know Billy Joel was there. This is from Ultimate Classic Rock. Is that a website? Must be. And the link. UCR. I had no idea what that was. And Billy Joel didn't enjoy Woodstock because there were no bathrooms. Dave Lifton. That's not the Dave Lifton I know. He's a younger guy. Billy Joel may have been a child of the 60s, but the appeal of that decade's crowning moment was lost on him. Hey, Billy Joel and I, a lie of hair, this is a union of minds. Are you? He recently told an interviewer that Woodstock wasn't his thing because he couldn't find a bathroom. This is true, but that would be just one of the things that I will talk about, as you'll hear. So he was, so Billy Joel talked to Entertainment Weekly. He said he went, oh, come on, this thing is still loading? Give me a break. A big break. Okay. Billy Joel said, I went to Woodstock. I didn't play there, but I went up on a motorcycle, which was a good move because the highway was just a parking lot. He wanted, Billy says he wanted to see Jimi Hendrix and The Who. I saw them, both. So I, you know, I was there. Okay. But after a day and a half with no real toilet facilities, what am I? A bear? I have to go in the woods? There was a lot of mud and people were smoking a lot of pot and taking a lot of acid. That's correct. Woodstock. And here's the, and this website and this report coming from a website. Remember, lots of people are reading about this. Maybe for the first time, because it was just Woodstock, and, you know, there's how many two generations since then. So the article reads, Woodstock, which took place from August 15th to the 18th, 1969, right? Here we are. Where are we? Let's see what it says. Was noted for the atmosphere. Oh, well, okay. Let's see what this guy writes. When an estimated 500,000 people created a peaceful environment despite a lack of food and sanitary conditions and an awful lot of rain, mud, and drugs. Yes, it was peaceful. Sure, there was some violence and stuff, but nobody died, not like in Altamont. And there's something else you're going to have to look up if you don't know anything about festivals. There were no murders. There were no, but there were, and there were births. There's another thing I was thinking about. Children who were born at the farm have grown up. That's two generations. And where are they? Anyone? Why aren't there articles? Or maybe there aren't. I have not done enough looking for these articles. Maybe I haven't done enough to look for them. Where are those people? That's another one, right? We don't know how many people were there. What did he say? Oh, yeah. Billy Joel said he was much more interested in the music than the party. He quoted, I didn't do anything back then. He said, I drank a beer or something. The first day I saw Santana, or was it Joe Cocker? It was dirty and itchy and covered with poison ivy. And I thought, just get me out of here. I've got to use a bathroom. Well, you know, he's saying about the bathroom. That's it. Yeah, that's it. That was it for the Billy Joel experience. Just get me out of here. I got to find a bathroom. And a little more than that and a little more upsetting than that for me, as you will discover. I don't know what's wrong with this. What's wrong with a mouse that you have to really hit it hard to get it, I don't know. Why am I asking that to you? Like you're going to answer me? My name is Frank Catolo, man whose name adorns the title of the show. It's the 50th anniversary of Woodstock, and I'm going to find where is it? It's missing. Where's the file? Okay, I got to find the file. I'm going to find the file, and I'm going to get, how'd this happen? Oh, I know how it happened. It happened because I'm going to clear my desktop. That's right, desktop. And I'm going to find, 725. That's not it. Come on. I took time to actually put this somewhere. And now it's not here? Come on. Here. I got it. They're trying to fool me. This is a mess. The desktop's a mess. Everything's a mess. This is how I do shows. In the mess. Here, 7:30. It's July 30th, 2009. For some reason or another, I did this show then. What am I looking for here? I'm looking for my, player. Here's my player. Where'd it go? Now where'd it go? Oh, Jesus, on the mount. Where are you now? Here. No, that's a wave. I don't want to wait. Throw this out. Get that out of here. Where is my... My name is Frank Catolo. The man whose name adorns the title of the show. Oh, I'm fine. I got it. And we're going to hear... I'm going to get... what? Okay. I'm going to go to, what, where do I go? 39 minutes into this show. Ah, yeah. Well, we've just done 45 minutes of this show. A lot of spiders down here. I'm going to go to the 39th minute. What is this? What the heck is this? Where is this? Okay. Well, there you go. Okay. Jeez, nothing works right when I want. It's my fault, right? 32. My name is Frank Cotolo. This is Cotolo Chronicles. I'm going to go back. We're going to go back now to. Can I really hit this mouse? 35, 37, 50. Here we go. 38, 38. 39, 11. That's good enough. 39, 11 is good enough. Here's me from the Woodstock show. I did debunking Woodstock. This was deconstructing Woodstock because you got to find different ways to use headlines. And from that show, I don't know what happens from here on in on this show. It was 40 minutes into it, 5 minutes over. Just going to keep going. You won't even know the difference, I guess, Gather. I guess, Gather. And here's what I thought about Woodstock before it was 50 years old. And I don't think much of it has changed.
I have. No, well, I do have notes. But not notes about, thank you. Not notes about what I'm going to say. I have notes because I wanted to remember some facts which we can add to my story. But let's look back. And no, you know what I'm not going to do? So to, at least I don't think I'm going to do this. And I'm not going to go like to YouTube and put on Jimi Hendrix playing the Star Spangled Banner and stuff like that. That's for the documentaries and hey, there's a movie. I joke with people about movies I have been in. Some of them I have been in. I don't joke, but when I joke about movies I've been in, you know, and I'm not saying like, you know, this isn't, you know, me, that's me. And I've starred in movies. I haven't. I'm not an actor. But what I'm saying is I have been in some movies, but what I'm saying is that I joke when I'm talking about that. Because it's a joke to begin with, but I also say, and I was in Woodstock, which the documentary was the story of that concert, the 3 days of love and peace. Let me start from what I think is the beginning. I say, yeah, I'm there. I mean, you know, and so are 499,000 other people at any given time. August 15th, 16th, and 17th. Here's the middle of August, 1969. In New York, where I was living, rock music was a culture, and I was involved in it to the hilt. In 69, playing with a local band and playing out there at bars, playing at, this was before I went super pro and played weddings. Super pro. When I played weddings for the mafia. I'm talking about when by 69, I was already, I don't know what a veteran might be, but I was already had been playing in bars and parties and stuff for a long time. So I was into the whole culture. I was into the culture. My hair was long. I had found what I thought was a channel for my art, not just music, the whole music culture. You got to remember the music culture of the 60s. And in 69, things were really busting out. But the music culture it was more artistically rounded in this sense. And that is that you didn't have to play. Everybody and his uncle played some kind of instrument. But the thing is that this generation, these bunch of people who were, for all due purposes, baby boomers, people born 49, the earliest 48. I mean, that's when it started, you know, although there were plenty of older, you know, plenty of beatniks involved in the 60s generation, but they had already gone through a very pure, generation in the 50s in the beatnik thing. And then all this other stuff happened, the British invasion and all this stuff. And a lot of people got involved with more than just music through all this. I was writing, I was painting, and there was, once it caught on commercially, of course, the great capitalist machine took over, and once it became a very commercial thing. Well, somewhere along the line, it's August 1969, we're on the precipice
of another decade. No one knows what's going to happen, except we all feel, most of us feel like the 60s have not ended. Okay, the 60s are just beginning to mature. Okay, there's still Richard Nixon still in office. Okay, there's politics too. Remember, this has to do with politics, and I'll mention all the groups who were involved in eventually being. But anyway, somebody had a great idea. What they thought was a great idea, it was to rent out a farm. The farm in this case was Max Jaeger, who I believe died. Hey, did you hear that Reverend Ike died? Yeah, I know that's just coming up out of my head, but it's true. And we have to talk about, maybe not tonight, but Reverend Ike is dead. I think he was, I hope he pops up. Well, he will pop up on the roll call of the Bone Guard at the end of the year. But Reverend Ike was 70-something years old. But he was, believe it or not, in the early 60s. But he was present. I don't mean it was a Woodstock. Maybe it was a Woodstock. I don't know. But the thing is that somebody came up, the promoters came up with the Woodstock Music and Art Fair. It was not supposed to be just a music, but music and art fair. That's what I mean. It had, because the 60s had more going for it in terms, now, I'm not saying the 50s didn't. The 50s were very, very, very literally oriented, artistically oriented, beatniks and stuff. It all had to do with, now it isn't just, and was it, matter of fact, it might have been more artistic than it was musical. Okay, but the music was very strong, but the art was changing, and of course, the drug culture had really set in for the 60s generation. I say that because, you know, they didn't originate it. They just more popularized it. Something was going on, and everybody who was from 17, I guess I'm almost legal, 18 on, by 69, and I was 19. Everyone was somehow involved in this, and I was too. And I remember hearing about this on the FM stations. At those days, the FM stations had just, they were blossoming, but they had just begun to come out of the woodwork of being the second-hand station for radio broadcasting. And they had dipped into the counterculture, and they were now something. They were now doing this freewheeling, playing album cuts and, you know, not play albums. For those of you out there, you got to remember this. Many of you people out there don't remember, but weren't born, so you don't remember it. Of course, you have nothing to do with it. Many of our audience, of course, is not, we're not geezers like me, okay, in that respect. You're not older. You're not from that ilk. You're not a baby boomer. You're an X or Y or Z or G or whatever generation you might be at this point. I've lost track. So you people, please listen to this, because you're going to hear from me, okay? So you're going to hear from me some different stuff. So here's what it was. So suddenly everybody knew about this. It was on the radio stations. The FM radio stations were talking about it. They were buying ads everywhere. Rolling Stone magazine and Crawdaddy magazine. Now remember, we've had Paul Williams, a good friend of ours, who not the singer, but the father of modern rock journalism, has been on this program many times. He started Crawdaddy and started the whole people up into Rolling Stone. Rolling Stone then got started. Now, so this, I think Crawdaddy was, I don't know if they were still around in 69. Maybe yeah, I think they might have been. This Woodstock Music and Art Fair was now advertised everywhere. And everybody who was part of this generation thought about getting there. And how would you get there? Well, you'd have to have a friend who has a car. You had a car, or you'd get in a van or whatever it was. You know, it was a communal type. Let's get up to upstate New York to Max Jaeger's farm, and let's go see these incredible groups that'll be there all at once. Not at once, not, you know, for the course of 3 days in 1969, the middle of August, 3 days, there were going to be all these groups who at the time were incredibly popular. Crosby, Stills, and Nash, and I can't name two. Well, you know, Joni Mitchell, Joan Baez, all the singers, Richie Havens, whatever happened to him, the Who, the What, the Where, and the When. Now, everybody was going to be there. Who was anybody? Carlos Santana? Way before he got anywhere near being a commercial Emmy-winning, Grammy-winning guy. You know, they were all there. The Jefferson Airplane. Yeah, okay, I'm not going to spend time. Okay, so, you know, to see them all meant, what are you going to do? You're going to go for 1 day, 2 days, or 3 days? And I really didn't intend upon going. But there was a friend of mine who had a friend. Now, a friend of mine had a cousin. This guy's name was Larry. I don't know where this guy has wound up. I don't know if he's still alive. And I got to be honest with you. I was thinking about telling the story. Until right now, I forgot his name. But it came to me right now because my neo-postmodern doors are open. This guy, Larry, was not. He was one of the fringes of the generation because he was in it for the ride and the fun. You got to remember that a lot of people who were involved in that generation. Okay, I was really involved in the artistic side. That's what I wanted. That's what I did. That's what I was, I was doing it before all this started, but in certain ways. And then this just helped it flourish. But there were so many people who were just in it for the ride, the fun, the drugs, the drunk. Suddenly, it was just okay. So when there was the advertisement of this gigantic party going to take place in upstate New York, there were people who just wanted to be there because there's like, this is going to be cool, man. We're going to drink and drop acid. We're going to smoke acid. We're going to smoke liquid acid. We're going to drink. We're going to smoke the acid. We're going to drink booze, everything. It's just going to be, we're going to pop pills, pop acid pills, it's going to be crazy. Now, what no one knew, okay, was that there were hundreds of thousands hundreds of thousands of fringe generation members. And that is those who did not play. They just listened. They were just into it. They wore the clothes. They had their hair. They said man, and they were into the whole groovy psychedelic thing. And they were, okay, they were just into the cultural, the fringe. They were fringe. They didn't play music. They were just the audience. They were an audience. They all, and I'm saying all, I think, in that area, all decided to go. Well, this friend of mine, who himself was a fringe, although he wasn't a crazy fringer. He was just, he was in a generation, but he wasn't a musician. And the bass player of the band I was in at the time, he was a friend of him. That's how I knew him. He'd been around my band for a long time and just hanging out. We want to hang around, guys. And he had a cousin. And that cousin, you know what? Maybe, I think his name was Larry. Okay, let's just do it as we remember, as we recall it, okay? Anyway, let's call him Larry, even if it's not, okay? He said, let's go. And it was the first time I was like, let's go. It's going to, like, what do you mean? Let's go to Woodstock. Let's go see all this stuff. So at least go for one day. Let's go and then stay for as long as we want. And I don't know why. I do remember that it's like, okay, how much does this cost? Because then that was the big thing. And I remember we bought these tickets. See, now this is, to my memory, we bought these tickets when we decided to go on King's Highway in New York. It was either at Sam Ash, which was a music store, a place where you bought instruments and that. And I think there still are Sam Ash stores around. Sam Ash sells instruments on the internet now. And I believe we bought them there. And I believe they were like $15 a day. That was it. And then there was, if you bought all 3 days, it was a discount. So everybody said, and the thing was like, look, you don't get a ticket, you're not getting in. That's, you got to remember, this is before the 15th. That's it. They said, you don't get a ticket, you're not getting in. And you had to pay for parking and stuff like that. So it was imagined that it was going to be, because upstate New York, I don't remember Max Yeager's farm. I don't think I have it here at all. I didn't figure to look at how large the land was. But they went up there, all the guys, the promoters, and made the stage, built the stage, this giant sound system, and they were just expecting people to come in, we take their tickets, and go. And that's what I expected also. And I figured, okay, so let's go for a day or what have you. And what the heck? It'll be completely controlled. It'll be just outside a concert and all these groups together, and you don't know when they're going to be on, but they'll be on, and blah, blah, blah. To my memory, that's what happened. And I looked forward to going. We were going in someone's van. It was just guys. It's too bad, too, because, but it was just guys. And I think it were four guys, and maybe, some bands are, a car? Maybe it was Larry's car, So I don't remember that, but that doesn't even matter. It found a way to get there, and we left on the 15th. And we had tickets. We bought the tickets. I think we bought it for 2 days, but we did intend to stay. Not that it mattered. Maybe we bought it for one day. And then when we were going to stay, we would buy another one. But we knew we were going. We went. We brought. We didn't bring much because we weren't really intending on staying overnight. So, but we had a bag full of them. I remember this too because I remember the Vienna sausage. You know, I'd never had Vienna sausage, you know, in Spam. You know, the canned stuff. We just brought some of this canned stuff and we figured, look, we'll buy the rest. We want to eat something. They're going to argue what? They're not going to have food. They're going to have food. They're going to have drink and food and everything. So off we went. Heading for, to camp under the stars, if we were. Here's what it said. This was the place to be. The largest rock concert ever conceived. Because there were going to be 3 days and tons and tons and tons of artists. Who were coming? Artists. Well, you know, groups. 3 days, not hours of music. Camping under the stars. Right? Saves, it said, months to plan the trip, save some money, create believable lives for parents, bosses, loves, and unloved ones. Round up your travel buddies or lover and hit the road, party. This is what it said. Now, upstate, the people up there, the people, the promoters, everybody who put this together, and they were ready. And the community was ready. The city, the county, the state officials, they all thought they knew what to expect and they felt confident. That they were going to handle the traffic, the crowd, the sanitation, medical, because they knew it was going to be a lot of people. They knew how many tickets they sold, and there were thousands. So, but they knew that they had that under control. And even thought they had, you know, all the unexpected problems, because they brought up things, okay? And they were prepared. But here's what they were not prepared. And this is where it broke down big time. This is where legend began to take over history. I'm going to get into history and throw away the legend. This legend took over. Here's what happened. We were driving up there, and we hadn't heard anything other than we were going, what's the second? We got a ticket. So I keep checking it. Where are your tickets? Where are your tickets? Here are my tickets. You got the tickets? I got the tickets. And we discovered something was wrong, different, unexpected, really unexpected. When we came within 25 miles of the site, and there were cars everywhere. There weren't just cars everywhere. Our car got up to a certain point and had to stop because the cars in front of us weren't even moving anymore. Well, we were moving very, very, very slowly. We didn't learn this till later. But we got to a point where the cars did not move. Now, the history, it says something like 20 miles, and I think it was less, because I know, because I remember calculating when we were there, within 14 miles of the site, 14 miles, we could not drive one more inch, because the cars had stopped moving in front of us for 14 miles. Well, first thing I thought was like, well, what do we do? Turn back? Now, turning back was an option, but I don't know how you would have done it if you got within 14 miles. Because remember, we weren't at the end of this line. There was still coming behind us. That's where it might have been 16, 17, 18 miles. Maybe it was 20. I don't know how long it was, but I mean, there were now cars behind us and they weren't moving because we weren't moving. We got to the point where it wasn't moving. They weren't moving in front of us. For 14 miles. I know that number because I counted with the help of some landmarks how far it was that we walked. Okay, it was Larry. There was the other two guys and me, and it was like, well, what are we going to do? If we walk away from the site, what do we do? We get the car is here. How are we going to come back and get the car? We either stay here, and believe me, as loud as rock music could be, you weren't hearing it 14 miles away from the site. We had no choice. We had to walk. And this was an exodus. This looked like, in a sense, if you've ever seen the flee from Egypt of the Jews, as is depicted in like, you know, the Ten Commandments. That's what was going on here. In fact, I got news for you. A lot of people were dressed like that too. This looked like the great Hebrew nation because everybody was dressed, you know, like they were slaves, like they were just carrying on their back whatever they had. On our way to the site, 14 miles. Okay, I'm 19 years old. I can walk 14 miles. Remember, this is not like comfortable weather either. This is August, deep August, in upstate New York. We only have X amount of liquids on us because we did not prepare. And we're wondering, like, well, what's this? Are there that many people there? What about our tickets? Bring your tickets. We still bring our tickets, right? Because we don't know. We have no idea. But we do know that we're walking 14 miles. Now, right off the bat, because I just have no choice. I know I'm going because now I have no choice. If it was up to me and I had my druthers, I mean, I would have said, and there was a way, you know, to get back, I would have said, let's go. There's going to be madness there. Because I thought like I thought. That's what I saw. That's what I forecasted. If there's 14 miles worth of cars here and all these people are going to the site, something's got to be wrong. I'm in wrong in the sense that this, we're not going into a controlled area. We are not going into an area where the city, county, state officials are all getting exactly what they expected. We are not. We are moving into the horde of our generation. This is like holy Christmas. I wonder if I was one of those Hebrews, if I would have went through the desert 40 years. This is 14 miles. Felt like 40 years on our way to Woodstock. And already I'm feeling the weight of this experience. I have no idea how bad this is actually going to get. Top of the second hour, July 30th, Roger K. Plus. That's where we are. My name is Frank Atoll, and the man whose name adorns the title of the program. I am chronicling my memories of 1969. I am eyewitness. I am a witness. I have come to justify Woodstock. Woodstock. I'm walking 14 miles, and this is beyond endless. It is beyond hot. We're already dehydrated. I mean, you go to a mile and this is dehydrated. Not only is this walking, because it's walking 14 miles, and we don't know when we start walking. This is an endless 14 miles per se. And we don't know how far we're going until we get there. And however far we go when we get there, we know that we're going to have to get back by walking back. At least we think. That's what we think. But we're not thinking. We're thinking straight forward ahead. Now, Larry, the man who has perpetrated, I'd not say perpetrated is the wrong word. The man who has fueled this trip is already in great disfavor with us, the other three guys, because you know he's already. I swear he must have dropped acid before we even got out of the car and parked. And he has with him fluids, but you know. He has with him fluids, not, he had a lot of tequila. He used to like tequila. And so, I knew him well enough. I knew well enough. Look, I'm an idiot. You know, I knew well enough. I'm not going to drink tequila on the way. I drink as much water as I can, try to get more, what have you. But remember, here I am, and here we are. Now there's four of us, and we're walking. Those of us who are conscious, and I'm saying that because Larry is just like, he's already fallen into the great generation trap. And he's already become one of the majority of this generation. They're just there for the ride. They don't have an inkling of the substance of what's going on, okay? Because they're just there for the ride, and all they want to do is get high and get drunk. And no, it couldn't have been any generation. Larry would have fallen into it and done it, okay? But he was outnumbered because the other three of us were, I must say, remaining rather sane about this. And I didn't want to get involved in flipping out. Okay, because this was tough for me. It was like, I already don't want to be here, and now I'm walking. And remember, we're not walking alone. We're walking with thick, four, three, six people thick, and just following this current of people that is going through, up through the roads, and then the public roads, because there's no driving. And then everywhere you look around you, left to the right, more streams of people. There's rows and rows and rows of people. This is very much reminds me of the Jews leaving Egypt. And it's that hot. It's just as hot. I am not happy. And I don't remember exactly getting there, but I do remember suddenly it was kind of soft. The ground became softer. It was like, uh-oh, okay? Because this was going to be not just a trek into an area you would just never be with this many people. This would be, okay, but this was also going to be a natural disaster, because there was going to be rain, or by the time we got there, maybe there was rain. I don't remember the chronology of these events, but I know that suddenly the ground got softer, and we could see the stage, and this would be like, well, you could see the stage from a long time away. But by the time we got to there, like I say, within a mile of the actual site of the farm, the ground was now getting muddy, and it was obvious. We look around because we had our tickets. It was obvious that nobody was going to be stopping us to get our tickets. Now, right there, in essence, one of my friends was particularly pissed at the fact that he wasn't going to get his money back either. He had money like, oh God, if we knew this, we wouldn't have put the money out. You know, this is the last thing on my mind though, but because I'm going like, oh my goodness, look at this place. It's bubbling over. It's bubbling over. And, you know, along the way of this 14 miles, I swear to you this happened. If you've seen the movie, you know that you could see older people walking. There's tons of footage. There's tons of feet of footage. Tons of footage. Tons of miles of footage. There's miles of footage. Maybe they weigh tons. I don't know these miles of footage. But along the way, when you're walking there, someone walked up to me. Now remember what I said. A lot of these people, they're not drinking water and liquids. They don't have a lot. They didn't bring a lot. They didn't expect to need as much of a personal arsenal of food and beverage. You didn't think you needed that much. You know, this is going to be incredibly commercial, even though it would be expensive to buy hamburgers and hot dogs. You knew it, but you brought some money. Okay. But these people were, and I don't know how many had already dropped acid and were smoking the weeds, but you could smell along the road. You don't smell acid, but you could smell in the thick air. Here you are trying to breathe as you walk miles and with very little liquid, and you could smell the pot. And there aren't cops walking around looking through people's pockets, and there's no way. How could you arrest hundreds of thousands of people? Because this is what was happening. Some guy runs up to me, and he's kind of harried, and he says, "Amen." You know, it's funny. Every time I do an imitation of those people from my generation who are kind of like, you know, flipped out. Because I made a character of this years ago on radio. But I always do one particular characterization. It's Dennis Hopper's character, which is a caricature in itself. In Apocalypse Now, the photographer guy that he plays, who's just wandering around Kurt's strange little tribe and village. So every time I do it, and every time I explain it, if I want to go into a character, I do this. But this is the voice of that generation to me. Okay, this is the voice, the sad voice of those who just went along for the ride, got the albums, just went on this trip, this I don't know how many year, this acid trip, this unreal journey into something. Into escape. That's what it was, really. But here's what Sky runs up to him. He goes, Hey, man! Have you seen my friend? My friend John? And he's like, I don't want to be touched, okay? First of all, just don't touch me. That's number one. Don't touch me. All right? I'm hot. It's hot. I don't need your hands all over me. I don't know where they've been. You know? So I went... No, John who? Huh? He says this. This is how high, this is how crazed this person was at the time. He said, my friend John, he said, he's kind of about this tall and he's got long hair and a mustache. It's like, yeah, I've seen him and his 15,000 brothers that are walking around here. Maybe I'm him, I don't know. So you shake him off like a spider or something, you know, and he's just running around, just stopping people. I mean, he might not have even had a friend. He might have been tripping so bad he thought he had a friend, John. But he's like, yeah, right. He had long hair and a mustache. Well, that narrows it down. Already, when that happened, and I wasn't even at the site, I was already cynical, and I was already pissed, and I was already uncomfortable, and I didn't want to be there. I went, look at this. But around me, and there was this other feeling. There was this feeling of, and this is the feeling that you'll hear about from so many people. You're certainly going to hear about it from the acts, I would imagine, and then the rock and rollers and people who were there. Because they, you know, I came in by helicopter, and it was just one big event to them. And they got to play in front of all these people. Turned out to be 500,000. Who's counting? Right? And so the acts, well, of course, you know, they're tripping, they're doing whatever they want, but they're isolated, insulated. They've got food. They've got bathroom facilities. They've got all the luxuries that celebrities are afforded because they're on that side. But in the swarm of people in this, what is now known as what? The Woodstock Nation? What's going on here is insane. It is not, for my money, a great gathering of love and peace. Now, they'll tell you, and this is true, that there were only a few drug busts, and don't ask me how that, because people were tripping out, and there were not medical facilities for 500,000. So this is what happens. Once we got there and we're walking in the mud and we realize that however long we're going to stay, all we have to eat and drink is what we have on us, which is not much because we didn't come prepared for that. Okay. But they said that there were only a few drug busts. Okay. No reports of burglary or violent crime in the surrounding communities. Even though some of that was trespassing, and that's a crime, because it was the overflow of 500,000 people on Max Yeager's farm. Where was Max Yeager? And was he in Paris? He wasn't at the house. I don't think. I don't know. 500,000. This is what they say. Here's 500,000 young citizens. And this comes from a celebration. Written celebration of Woodstock. On the positive side, 500,000 young citizens were virtually left on their own and discovered the words sharing, helping, consideration, and respect to be very powerful. Thousands left. Well, we don't talk about left. Okay. That's what they found. Okay. Now, granted, you could talk to anybody. You could say anything to anybody, and they were all there. I didn't see any fist fights. Okay, great. 500,000 people got together. There's no fights. But you know what? This is survival. This is nothing. This is very little to do. It's with because there's people who are freaking out. There's people who are dancing freaking out. There's people fainting. There's people, they don't have enough medicine for the people who are, getting sick, and you could understand people getting sick because it's nauseating out there. Now I miss when we realized we needed water, and I needed water. I needed water. What am I going to do? Someone around me, I don't even know who, I don't know, said, "There's, you know, so where's the water? You know, where do you get water?" And there's a truck. They were bringing in these trucks with water. And they had these faucets on the side of them, and they couldn't get the trucks close enough, so people had to walk to the trucks because you can't. I mean, people were now with their blankets, their tents. They were now laid out on the mud because it had rained, and it would rain again. Okay, and so they're all there, and some of them have children and these kids, and the kids' faces are painted. You know, they're like this is the it's like the template for hippie. And I'm there, and I'm standing in the mud, and my sense is I don't belong here. That's my sense. This is horrible. I don't want to learn. It's like me. I'm like, this. I don't think there's anything snotty about this, because this is just, to me, it's like, oh, my God, look at all you people. What, for what? To see the Jefferson airplane? Are you guys nuts? To see Crosby, every one of these I'd seen when I'd go to the Fillmore during downtown, the Fillmore. We'd go to the Fillmore. We'd see these great, we'd see all the concerts we wanted to see, all the acts before they became gigantic and went to stadiums. The point is, at the Fillmore, even though there were people there in the audience who dropped acid and smoked, and, but you know, it was like there were bathrooms. And there were, you know, there weren't a lot of fights there either. And I think that if you looked at all the Fillmore nights that there were concerts, you would also say, hey, there was no violence. There was no, everybody had that sense of like, hey man, be cool, you know? Okay, that's fine. Except that did not take away from the color of the ugliness of this whole site. Just because 500,000 people showed up and they were only supposed to be whatever, 100,000 or 50,000. You know, it didn't take away from the fact that this was uncomfortable. This was a trial by fire. I did not come here to be tested. I did not come here to walk another 2 miles to get a cup of water. And that's what I did. That's when I knew something was really wrong. That there is a great divide between those heroes who people talk about, who people came to see. Who for a million years they weren't in the audience. There was a great separation. There was a wall no one could climb over. I mean, the Crosby, Stills, and Nash, and the Who's, and all these guys, and the Jimi Hendrix, they didn't walk out among the people. They stayed with their vans. They stayed inside of their own little world there. Where they had water, where they had any kind of beverage, where they had food, where they had everything. What about sharing? Did they enjoy being part of the swarm? Did they walk among the 500,000? Did they see what was going on? Did they try to help? No, they didn't do any of that. Maybe they say things like, oh, we played for nothing, though. We wound up playing for nothing. Yeah, right. Being in the movie, and the thing, and then getting the exposure. I mean, give me a break. It's the way I was feeling. It's like, come on. This is not one great nation. Later, Joni Mitchell would write a song called Woodstock, and she would be right in there. She would just be right in there with the peace and love and everything. Just because there were no fights. Just because, now wait a second, you know, there were two deaths, but there were also two births. So women went there on the precipice of who are those two kids who were born there? What are they going to remember? They're going to be told that this great offering of peace and love and music went on when it was just a big, bad concert. It was an overblown and it's going to be over fantasized forever. I walked over a mile. It felt like 10 more miles to get a cup of water. in one of these trucks that had these sprockets and faucets on the side. I was knee deep in mud. And I said, you know what? Aside from the fact that I'm not being shot at, and I had no idea while I was there, okay? I was no idea that someone wasn't going to take out a gun and start shooting. Okay, it didn't happen. But, you know, but I mean, here I was, a man who had gotten out of going to Vietnam, a kid, gotten out of going to Vietnam, went to college. I was in college at the time. Here I was walking miles in mud to get water. This was one of the reasons I didn't want to go fight in Vietnam. Believe it or not, it is. It wasn't just that I could be shot and killed. Any war, you could be shot and killed. Even if you have the greatest pieces of equipment and you're not out in the jungle, I did not want to walk in mud knee deep and in a forest and be with all these people who I didn't know. And for all I know, I didn't want to go through all this. This is not my idea of fun. I don't care about the generation. Let me tell you something about that generation. Where are a lot of them now? We'll talk about that too. But remember who was there? Everybody took advantage of Woodstock from every angle. Here's what I'm talking about. Who were there? There were anti-war protesters. Okay? And who else was there? Vietnam vets were there. See? Whole point. Okay? So it wasn't just, you remember Altamont? Altamont was a West Coast concert kind of Woodstock thing, and there's a movie about that called Gimme Shelter, because the Rolling Stones were there, and the Rolling Stones decided to use Hell's Angels as their bodyguards. They always had a little bit extra going on upstairs, didn't they, those Stones? Okay, and someone did die. Someone was murdered there, okay? That was a very, very, and they, oh, it was a very bad thing. Altamont was murdered. Okay, yeah, no, but I don't want you to think Woodstock. Just because there were no murders, and there were two deaths, and there were plenty of people freaked out beyond belief. Who knows how many got crazy and nuts. But I mean, I'm there and I'm going, I paid to be here. I walked 14 miles, now I'm walking 2 miles. And no one else is complaining. Me, you know, and I didn't want to get high to be able, because that would not help me. It would not help me. I knew it. It would not help me overcome hunger, thirst, and discomfort beyond belief. Now, as far as those acts are concerned, those great rock and roll acts, they were very far. They were little guys and gals. I'm telling you, I'm making a little thing with my fingers here. They were little guys and gals. I could see them. They were so far away from the stage, we couldn't even get close enough to the stage. Could we hear them? Yes, we could hear them. Big deal. I remember seeing John Sebastian when he went on at Woodstock. Just him and his guitar, right? And this is what was that. I remembered, because I used to see John Sebastian at the Cafe Agogo and at the Bitter End, two places in the Greenwich Village. Where I used to go for late night shows in Greenwich Village, and I used to sit in a table that was directly in front of the stage. And it was like, I almost felt like I knew him. And we had talked once in a while, but the point I'm trying to make here is that I was comfortable. They served me drinks. I sat there. I paid to come in. I was comfortable and I heard the music, and the crowd was not, I wouldn't feel like part of the crowd. When it's that intimate, you don't feel like a member of this sweeping, numberless bunch of dirty, filthy people. I don't care if they know about shit. They learn sharing, helping, consideration, and respect. And here I am watching John Sebastian, the same act, from and this must be another mile. He must be a mile away. Granted, it's a great sound system. Big deal. I'm sitting, standing in mud. I'm sinking in quicksand here. I'm thirsty, I'm hungry, and all the John Sebastian music in the world is not going to make me feel any better. I'm not looking around and seeing everybody and going, oh, God. And now, because I'm thinking, what if I have to go to the bathroom? Where is there a bathroom? Oh, bathrooms. I don't know how many people just did it. How many? I mean, because there were no facilities. And here I was, and I went, oh, man. Let's take a quick show. You're listening to Cotolo Chronicles. My name is Frank Cotolo, and the man who joins the title of the program. And I'm one of the people who was at Woodstock. that weekend, who did not believe there was a new Woodstock nation and who did not like whatever that nation was telling me it was and saw the hypocrisy of the whole darn thing. I'm going to turn on my cell phone here right now and see if anybody texted me while we're here. Because remember, not a lot less people listen. You know, I might get texts during the week because people are listening to this on the on their iPods, iPhones, or, you know, more people get this show that way. And so I'm going to get these random messages. No one is texting me. Okay, fine. Do you have your Protestant fluids? Did you hear what I was just saying? Replenish your precious bodily fluids is what I was trying to say. Let's do that right now as we... I didn't have my Yukon Jack. You know why? I'll tell you why. You don't know why. Because I had I had two shots of bourbon. It's great bourbon that I still have left over from something. And still here. I just decided to have that with my coffee. And then the coffee, that's all gone for now. But we've got we still have, you know, almost a half hour left of this program. And so I didn't have that. But I want you to know that whatever you have, man, when you talk about replenish precious bodily fluids, that's like, there it is. I mean, this was dehydration city out there at Woodstock. And when I got the amount of water, all the amount I could, that's all I could have. It's all I could have. I got more water. We got more water. Larry didn't need more water. He was just freaked out. And he was doing, you know what? He was embarrassed. This is really, to me, it was embarrassing. Here I was. He was like, hey, did you ever see the movie Woodstock? Well, these people were standing up and dancing. You know the old thing about dances if nobody's looking? These people just flipping out. And there's not one of them who was not high. Because if you're in your right mind, you're sitting there going, where's my meal? How am I going to eat? I don't feel well. you don't have it covered. You haven't masked the pain of being there with drugs. You're sitting there going, oh my God. And it's difficult to you know, you can't, when you're, you know, trying to make the best of it. That's the thing. So I'm going to make the best of this. How long are we guys staying? How long are we staying? And they went, I don't know. We have enough Vienna sausage for the night. And of course, you're thinking like, oh my goodness. There's also a 14-mile hike back. Maybe more. Because, you know, once we were there, how did we know? How did we know that beyond the site, there weren't another 15 million people who couldn't get in? How did we know that everyone from all over the country didn't line up behind us? Because we don't have any, there's first of all no TV, nobody brought a radio. Some people had radios. And I was walking around looking at people. And that was the most, I mean, I was people watching and looking around and wondering what the heck I could possibly get from any of them that would help me. They talk about sharing. I want to share. Hey, man, we ain't got no more water or we'd give you some. No, we don't have any, I don't have any food. We're not hungry, though. Here, you want a toke? And, of course, you could lose your friends very easily, just like that guy. Who couldn't find his friend. And if he ever got to the site and found that there, that, you know, just about everybody had long hair and mustaches and beards. Who were there? Anti-war pro. So again, this swarm of the generation is not pure in itself either because he was taking advantage of it. There's black militants there taking advantage. And then these pockets, these isolated pockets, like you're at some kind of a street festival and there are these kiosks. Okay. So you go over to the black militants who are in one area, you know, and they're all, and they're, you know, their fists are up in the air and they're there. And so, and what I'm saying to you is that there is a polarization. This great nation. Oh, no. Now there's a polarization in it and there's people trying to make their points because it's their point, and there's anti this and anti that. There's not a, there's, you know, and there's groups of gays and lesbians, then they're getting together. There's anti gays, and they don't want to be near the gays. So, right? I said, there's a way they're about peace and love. Okay, there's no fights, but they're there also. There's drug advocates, people who are legalized pot, legalized plant, LSD, take a trip, go on. There's people for the government. There's people that are going to like, yeah, we're fighting, we're in a war, and a war is what we got to do to war, or communism. And there's the anti-war guys, you know. Country Joe and the Fish up there singing. Right? 1, 2, 3, what are we fighting for? Don't ask me, I don't give a damn. Next stop is Vietnam. Yeah, right. Well, you know, it feels like Vietnam. This is training. As far as I'm concerned. Like, this is horrible. And of course, most of them are dumb and just here for the music. That's the group. I'm just here for the music. They're the ones. That's the fringe generation. They're the people who are making up most of this. You know, if you're a musician, if you're really into the music, it's pretty hard to enjoy it under the circumstances because you're more concerned about your natural body functions. And so it doesn't matter. I remember I saw groups. Yeah, all right. I heard them and they were there. And, you know, but, if I knew there was a movie coming out, if I had an inkling of what I was going to go through, I'd have waited and watched the movie. Why be put through all that, you know? The group I'm with, there's a problem because Larry just wants to stay. He just wants to stay and even takes every piece of, he's walking around smoking with other group people and stuff like that. And it's like, yeah, I don't want to be any part of it. I mean, granted, I'm looking at the chicks and I'm looking around, but it's like, there must have been a lot of free love and everything going on there, but I sure didn't find any. I'll be honest with you. Didn't happen for me. There's a lot of stuff going on, but a lot of people had gone with people. They were these, so the 500,000 was not just this one big embroidered hippie blanket of people. As I said, there were these pockets, and there were these people who came with one another. And they were doing it with, they stayed within themselves. Sure, they were sharing, I'll do this, I'll do that, I'll help you this, I'll give you what crumbs I have, I'll share this, anything like that. But they were all staying with themselves. This was like this was like any neighborhood. This was like a community in the sense that everyone was living there. Everybody had squatted their ground. They were living there for however long, okay? But they weren't really interacting. Man, when I hear these people talking, the artists talking about how, you know, how incredible it was there. And when they talk about, like Joni Mitchell's and stuff, who talk about having the Woodstock Nation. We were 500,000 strong. Time we got to Woodstock. Whatever, peace and love and all that. I'm not saying peace and love is junk. I'm just saying it was like, this was subterfuge. To me, this was the cultural apocalypse of the 60s. It was over. 70s, I didn't know what to expect. And it did linger. And the whole rock and roll thing and that. I mean, it lingered and drug thing lingered. But this was putting them all together in this big farm. The separation, very defined to me. Believe me, there weren't enough. Let me tell you something. And yes, nobody's going to tell you this. There weren't enough security people. There weren't enough, just call them security people. There weren't enough local police, all of that stuff. But let me tell you this. There was no want for security for those cherished, wonderful icons of rock and roll. Sebastians and the Jefferson Airplanes and Hendrixes and Havens and all those people up there. The Donovans and the... They were fine. They had to worry about driving in. Not one of them was thirsty. We say, what is this? Well, yeah, this means something to me. It's always means something to me. Because apart from watching old, English wars battles, old battles, Japanese battles, aside from the general himself who's got to stay alive, so he stays behind and, doesn't, particularly fight because he's orchestrating stuff. But, he has been there. He has been among the soldiers. That's how he got to be general. But aside from all that stuff, this is partaking in the atmosphere staying aside. Staying apart from it. Staying in your own little room there. If this is just another gig to some of these guys, that's fine with me. They came in, they played, they left, that's fine. But the ones who are going to talk in the next 2 weeks about the great Woodstock, and they were there, and they played, and this watched as 500,000 people just just loved one another and took care of one another. And it's like, yeah, right. Okay, pal. You didn't come out. No, you didn't come out and see any of us. You didn't come out and share any water with us. You didn't come out and do anything with us. You just stood there because you were better or whatever. I mean, you know what? Is that bitter? Am I not supposed to be bitter? I just hated the fact that those guys up there were getting, I had to walk 2 miles to get a cup of water. And Stephen Stills was back there getting as fat as he could possibly get, adding more weight to himself, and would continue to. David Crosby was there, destroying his liver. Always enough. There's enough acid back there. There's enough everything. And chauffeurs. Sorry, I wasn't buying it. I stood there when I came back from the water. And, you know, I felt horrible. I had not gone to the bathroom. I think I peed somewhere, but I held the rest inside of me. Just there was nowhere to go. And I wasn't gonna drop trowel. Where would I go? There were people everywhere. I saw people doing that right there. And I wondered, why is anyone here? What's going on? I don't feel a part. I don't feel like your brother. I don't feel like your sister. I feel like a guy who's stuck in a giant ghetto, in a cultural ghetto. I'm not being a snob and saying, I tell you the snobs, you want to know who the snobs are? Yeah, look at them, watch, we're just sitting here watching them. No one who played at Woodstock deserved that audience. Most of them empty-headed, most of them just going along for the ride. Peace, love, and everything they said they stood for. Would in the next decade, before the next decade was done, they would abandon all of it. The greater percentage of that generation would not even understand the values they thought that they were creating. Oh, we're changing the world. We're changing the world with love and music. Mozart changed the world with music that people loved and still love, and love through generation upon generation upon generation. The beauty, that was changing the world, civilization, with music. Not getting up at dawn and playing the Star Spangled Banner on one guitar to 500,000 people who were hungry, thirsty, and felt like they were living on love, and just were in the mouth of this volcano, it was that when it was over, could not be any better for this, other than to say, I was there. I was at Woodstock. You at Woodstock? I was at Woodstock. Was that you? Was that you? You know, if you live through if you remember anything about the 60s, man, then you didn't live through the 60s. All this stuff. It is so blown out of proportion. It is so fictional. It is so romanticized now. The legend is better than the truth, so they print the legend. But what bothers me, because I have a real problem with that generation, my generation, which is what I always loved about The Who when they did My Generation and then they destroyed all their instruments. I loved that. I loved it because it was taking it all of it, the very essence of revolt and rock and roll and everything that was. It took it all to the zenith, which was destruction. You play any instruments as hard as you can, and then you just break loose, you go nuts, and you destroy it all. That was a very marked statement to me. And I saw it done in Central Park. One of the last times they ever did it, they stopped doing it. And it really had impact. More, you know. So, but The Who were up there, and it doesn't matter. I don't know. What'd they do? They drugged out. They ate. They did it. Who knows? There were groupies. They had sex. Everything. One big frickin' party for all of them. But they weren't lacking anything they needed. In a couple of weeks, you're going to hear a lot of stuff because 40 years, the 40th anniversary. Oh, I was there. I was in there. Oh, the great, the love, the peace. What a generation. What growing up. Let's listen to the music. Oh, it was great. Remember this guy. Remember that guy. Oh, God. I remember that song. It was the first time I did this. Oh, dude. Well, we all have these memories and stuff. But, you know, the essence of Woodstock, for me, became very painful in this respect. The 14... I know I saw groups and stuff. Okay, we sat, we ate, we finished, we drank what we had to drink, and we saved a little bit or felt we would get some from people along the way for the walk back. But back at the car, I remember the feeling of sitting in that car after the 14 miles back. We did not stay the night. I just said, I'm not staying the night. I don't care. I'm not staying here overnight. And it's sleeping in the muck and the crud just to hear another group while these guys are showering. I just don't think it's right. And this is a mess. And I can't identify with any of these people. My feet, my legs were so tired in that car. Somehow we managed because, and I don't remember this at all, but so we did manage to get, turn that car around and go back. A lot of people were going in and out. There were still people showing up the second day, third day. We were there, the second day, I'm sure, the third day, whatever. But, you know, there were, it wasn't, there might have been 500,000 people at one particular time, but there were not always 500,000 there. The hawking going on, the things, and you know, there was more, you know, with the everybody selling ideas and concepts and anti this and anti, it's just tiring. This is just tiring. Where are you people going to be in 5 years? At another Woodstock. Living in the world you changed with music, love, and sharing. The drive back was horrible, but the next day, you know, here's what was great, the shower I took when I got home. I don't know how long it lasted, but it was wonderful. It was cold. It was warm. I lathered every part of my body. I felt, and as I was taking the shower, so it was cleaning, I didn't just feel like I was getting refreshed again and my body was feeling warm. I felt like I was washing off the sweat and the hypocrisy and the commercialism of the entire generation. All of them. I felt like I had, when I was done with the shower, when I got out of the shower, and I felt like, and I remember because it wasn't at my house. I had gone to where my parents were, at my aunt's house, and I showered there. Because they were having some kind of a barbecue or something. And I wanted some good food. And I went back. I was dirty. I showered. I went to Lord's. And I had the water treatment. And I was cured. Right after that shower. However long it took. And then I ate. But the great pain was yet to come. Because I was not through with my experience. I had not relieved myself in many, many, many hours. And even though I had not eaten that much, and then I ate when I got back and what have you, I had the worst case of constipation. I can't say this any other way. Ever. The first time I sat down to try to do that on returning from Woodstock. And so here I was happy to have felt like I escaped my own generation. I was telling people things and nobody, I was telling how horrible this was. And, you know, most people of my own age didn't believe it. I was telling the older people how terrible. And I remember sitting in the upstairs bathroom of my aunt's house, looking outside, and the adults were there, all members of the World War II generation and World War I generation. My grandfather was alive at the time. And I was looking out the window, very hot, sitting there trying to do my business. And I saw that world. I saw them, that generation. And I thought to myself, what are these people so upset? Are they so upheaved? Are they so in such pain? Because they believe this or they have this this political view or because of this value and stuff like that. I thought, and suddenly all those faces changed into the faces I had just been with. Because I knew that, you know what, these, everybody, what are we going to do? What are these people going to do? They're going to go get jobs and they're going to take the paint off their face and they're going to stop taking the acid and then maybe they'll continue to smoke now and then, but they'll drink the alcohol and the alcohol will become a social drink and they're all going to be like all these people out there at this barbecue. Who's going to get older? And that's what's going to happen. The torch will be passed and it's not going to be the torch of, and what's going to happen to all those people who performed? What are they going to do? They get richer, perhaps? A house? Fatter? Like Stephen Stills? Move, buy a villa in France? Live there? All your royalties? And then come back as an oldies act? Because no matter how you do it, it's going to be an oldies act because the next generation is going to take over. You're going to sing the same song you did for the next 20 years. That's how you're going to make a living, if you need to make a living. Or do you still need to feed that ego, even after it's gone? You'll find your audience. It's the generation that was lost in space. It's like Don McLean sang in American Pie. When he talked about the day rock and roll died, he made a great statement. A generation lost in space. And they didn't turn into anything. It says here thousands, and this I'm reading from one of the Woodstock sites, thousands left the Woodstock event with a totally different outlook on life. I did, but not like this. Not like this.
A lot of that came true, huh? Wow. Heading towards another season. We'll be back when we get back. Hopefully next week. ControlTheChronicles.blogspot.com. Sometimes on Facebook. I don't know about Facebook. That's a whole other thing. We got stuff coming up. Maybe Craig will be here next week. We'll see what we're going to do. I have guests. We'll do stuff. Go buy the books. Don't forget the books. Thank you for people who've been buying my books over at Amazon, at blurb.com, and at Lulu. My name is Frank Cotolo, the man whose name adorns the title of the show. Good night, Mrs. Ernst Weil, wherever you may be located. And for the rest of you, that's right. Piece of love. Oh, God, give me a piece of love. Oh, my God. Okay. I have nothing more to say.